Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning. Welcome. Hello. Come on in. Grab a seat. Or stand, however you're comfortable. I'm Jesse. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded ancestral territory of the Hulkamalum and Squamish-speaking peoples. Today on the program, we have an interview from Public Affairs intern Rebecca about youth voting and student voting, both in the most recent provincial election here in BC and also in the presumed upcoming federal election, once Parliament is no longer prorogued, etc. And maybe a little bit more. We'll see how the hour takes us. There will, of course, be some music in and among the talk. And we are going to start with music as we usually do. Last week, I started with music from the Magic Triangle as they had just released their new record, Trapo Casual, that very morning. And I'm going to do the same thing today. I will play you a different track off of Trapo Casual by the Magic Triangle. I'm really liking this album. It's a lot of fun and it goes in a lot of different directions, which for a three-piece comprised of a saxophone, drums, and a bass, is impressive, the variety and the kinds of explorations they're able to make. So without further ado, we're going to get things going with La Cleta by the Magic Triangle. And we'll chat after. We'll be right back.
You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia. We strive to provide perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media. If you'd like to know more about us, check out our website at cjsf.ca.
Hi, everybody. I am Rebecca, and I'm the public affairs intern here at the station. And today I'm joined by
Sanjay Jerem,
Who is a political science professor. Here at SFU. And we're just going to talk a bit about student voting and kind of the engagement that students have with voting, since I did a bit of coverage for the provincial election that just happened and talking to a handful of students on campus about how informed they felt, how much they felt that they were targeted and heard by candidates. So to start off, do you want to maybe give an introduction to yourself, a bit about you?
Sure. I did my doctorate in political science at the University of Toronto. That was a long time ago at this point. I've since been a professor at Brock University in St. Catharines, Ontario, before I came out to Vancouver to take the job here. You know, I used to work more specifically on immigration politics in sort of regional jurisdictions, but I've broadened since then. I teach mostly now in research methods, but also in broadly in Canadian politics. And that's been more of my interest now is Canadian political ideologies, Canadian public opinion. I do lots of media on those issues, and I've also continued to sort of have a small research stream on those issues. So, yeah, I'm kind of really in all things Canadianist at this point.
Wow, it sounds like you've really dabbled kind of all around politics then.
It's been dabbled, but there's a through line. Probably it would take longer to explain that through line, but
Do you find you end up gravitating more towards provincial or federal kind of research?
I think that the literature in political science and the media pull you to federal politics because there's more demand. And there's also more, you know, in academics, it's similar where, you know, there's certain research tends to catch people's attention and people seem to enjoy, just like federal politics research more. But there is definitely a push to do more in the provinces, understand them, because there is a lack of research on provincial politics in Canada and understanding amongst the public. I would say that, and to be honest, I actually would, my goal is to teach a course on provincial politics in the future and to teach on federalism because of that and try to do more, you know, to try to push myself further in that area, even though it's a little bit harder because you have less of an audience, right?
So. Yeah, because I'm from England, so I came over here and got involved in, covering provincial politics, and it took so long for me to wrap my head around it because the system is quite a bit different from back home and trying to understand it. And I was thinking, if I was a student here and I see how kind of overworked students are over here compared to how I find it at university back home. And I was thinking, I don't know if I would be able to sit down and wrap my head around the provincial side of things, let alone federally. So I was wondering, from your perspective, what issues do you think from the provincial election that's just happened in BC do you think were most significant to students? And do you think they were addressed to students kind of effectively?
That's a really good question. I do think that the issue of affordability was, you know, front and center in the provincial election and continues to be front and center in federal politics. Right now we have this sort of alignment as to what seems to be the sort of master issue. Obviously things like housing and immigration get sort of folded in to general affordability issues, and all of these things I think have some importance to students, whether they necessarily realize it imminently or not, is that, you know, students are, it's an interesting demographic because, you know, you're coming, let's just assume undergraduate students, 18 to 22. First, like you said, it's your first engagement with the system as an eligible voter. You are very busy, you know, because often you're working a part-time job and you're studying. You're sort of transitioning into a new part of your social life, and that's also really important to you. So I do find that, you know, I do have a lot of students who are really interested to learn, but I do agree with you that it is interesting that they don't, people overestimate how much time students have to really spend learning the issues. And it's kind of unfortunate because I do think political parties tend to speak past them for that reason. And because of the other thing I didn't mention yet is that no matter what we do, it seems that younger people tend to vote less than older populations. There does seem to be, it's not perfectly linear, but there is a relationship between age and vote turnout. And I think, you know, behind the scenes, even though when asked, politicians will claim to speak for young people, but really they're more interested in putting forth policies and ideas that are targeted more to those who are 35, 50, even in, you know, the 55 plus group is a group that votes, you know, quite substantively. So I think that, you know, if you look at how things are pitched, those are always in the background. Because, you know, when we think about British Columbia, you know, no party was proposing, you know, radical solutions to a problem that many young people walk around campus feeling, like housing, right? Something acute where they can't find rentals. The idea of even buying something, it's like, would be just unimaginable for most students, right? And, you know, if you look at both, all the parties talk about housing, but who are they really talking to, right, when it comes to the policy initiatives they're offering, right? Whether it's sort of, you know, tweaks on mortgage periods, whether it's, you know, housing starts and things like this. It's not like, you know, okay, well, we need to create a segment of housing that's suitable for this younger population to sort of transition out of their parents' homes. How can we do that, right? It's more broad-based. And again, there could be solid economic reasons for that. But I mean, I think students should expect that their politicians would speak directly to them, considering how important they are to the future of the province.
Yeah. And I think when you touched upon the fact that you're transitioning at that age to a different point in your life where it's kind of your learning goes way more independent and trying to adjust to that. And it takes a lot of time to get used to. And when I was researching coverage for this election and reading the platforms, like, they're very extensive, the platforms that they put out, so you're definitely having to set aside a lot of time to go through each party's platform to properly educate yourself in what each policy is that they're proposing to have an informed decision. And most students probably will not have the time to be setting aside all of that in order to make an informed decision, so they probably just decide, well, I don't really know, so I would rather just not vote. Which I find, it's sort of similar back home. I would think that it's more, with university back home, a lot of students in the UK are not commuters, and I know this university is a big commuter uni, so they have the added kind of transition of, like, cooking for themselves, living by themselves, dealing with bills and everything. It's very common to not be living at home whilst you're doing your degree, which I think contributes to back home, the voter turnout being so low, like it is here for the 18 to, like, 24-year-old category, is significantly low, because students are thinking, I've got so much going on, and trying to juggle going from my parents cooking and doing my laundry and everything to doing it all myself on top of university, that unless politicians are speaking directly to the students, making it clear, like, we're talking to young people on this, and this issue, they don't have the time to kind of read between the lines and figure out what's relevant to them. Do you think that there are, aside from sort of that, particular barriers that prevent students from participating in voting?
From voting specifically, obviously, for some, the process of getting on the voter registration, it's not particularly complex, but I wouldn't say that Elections BC, you know, is particularly forthcoming with, like, you know, showing up to campus and making it easy for students who haven't voted before to tell them, you know, what they need to do. And even then, right, anybody who's a citizen of Canada with a BC driver's license or some kind of identification, you have to be a citizen, that is a requirement for voting here, could show up to a ballot in where they live, a polling station where they live, and sign up on the spot. But I don't think a lot of people know that.
Yeah.
I think that there are a lot of people students in particular, who have maybe transitioned into, you know, are now 18 and can vote, but wouldn't think that it's that straightforward. And I think we need to do a better job of, you know, outreach to younger people to get them to vote, right? So there's students, sometimes it's deceiving to me, because I'll, you know, a political science professor, when I see these students who would probably, not even all of them, but a lot of them would have a better sense or would be motivated to do so. But, you know, who's speaking to the students in a biology class or a business class and who are 18 and just, you know, overwhelmed by trying to get A's and trying to, you know, keep their head above water, and the idea of voting. And I think it makes, you know, when we're talking about here, I can't imagine that a lot of students in those types of courses and programs are getting a lot of political education or motivation or any kind of influence unless their family is particularly political, or friends, right? Then other than that, if their circle is not political, then it's likely that they will sort of continue that trend.
Yeah, so you're thinking that more kind of targeted outreach to younger people and students in particular coming onto university campuses and explicitly telling them how simple it is to sign up and just providing more outreach on the subject would be a way of increasing voter turnout. What other steps would you like to see the government take for improving outreach to students?
Well, I would, so like you read the platforms and I read them, but I really can't remember at this point the details. But what I can do, what I can say is that there isn't, like I think we've already mentioned this, but if you think, well, when you say the government, I mean, obviously the party in power would be sort of control in sort of the policy agenda of a of any government of the day. But let's assume that in a system like BC, at this point, we're kind of moving to, we've always generally had a two-party system, but now we have a different two-party system as the BC Liberals have folded and the BC Conservatives become sort of the main center-right alternative. If we look at those platforms, I don't, like I said, I don't really see either of the parties speaking directly to young people in a way that would resonate, right? Is that what do young people want? They want to know, well, can I afford my education? And what does that mean? You know, what is, how can that happen now? And why is my education so unaffordable? Why is it that the job market is so challenging in British Columbia for young people to enter? Why aren't there more opportunities to sort of bridge from university into internships and things like that in various careers? Why is it so elitist? Because there's only certain kinds of programs and offer those things that are more expensive and often more challenging to get into, which again, you know, we have a liberal society, competition is fine, but there also needs to be opportunities across the board for different sort of spectrums of students who are entering university. And I think it's, you know, it's on us to provide that. And I don't think we do. Right? We sort of like throw up our hands and say, well, you know, just keep your head down, work hard, and, you know, you'll figure it out. But I don't think that's enough. I think we need to do more. So I guess to sort of answer your question simply from what I've been saying is that, like, if I'm a student right now and I see that or I don't see anything for me, why am I going to vote? is a better question, right?
Mm. Do you think that maybe if there was a different way of delivering the kind of proposed policies during like campaigning before election, rather than like hefty documents that are very detailed, putting something, I don't know, maybe on social media might increase young people's engagement with it if the information was presented in a much more simplified kind of way?
That's kind of stretching my knowledge because I'm not an expert on the social media politics. That's an area that's developing, and there certainly are people who could speak with more depth on that, and I do think that the parties to varying extents have tried that. I don't know how convincing it is, especially when, you know, we think about the leaders and their ability to communicate to younger people. I'm just speculating here, but looking at hearing David Eby give his talks and hearing the Conservative leader give his talks during the campaign, you know, I never heard either effectively talk to young people in a way that would speak to them. As someone who is, you know, at this point, a very old millennial who has students who are much younger than me, but I know them and I speak to them. And so I can't imagine that connection was strong given the communication style I saw from both of them. So would putting them on a TikTok make a difference, is to answer your question? I'm not sure. You'd have to ask students themselves, and I would suspect no. I don't think it's necessarily about the medium, but the message would be my presumption. But again, someone who has more expertise in this would know. And again, we know that obviously students spend more time on social media than engaging with traditional news, which is fine. That's just the way the world is sort of evolving. There's other, you know, I think issues arise with that, with sort of information certainty as to what you're getting on social media. But I think if it's coming from the official parties and they're using it properly, that's great. But there's no indication as of yet to say, well, definitively that is helping, right? There's no one party really coming out in the lead in terms of like social media engagement. They're all doing it, but I don't know if they're all doing it. I wouldn't say that any of them are doing it particularly well.
Yeah, because I was going to say when I was researching around this topic a while ago, I didn't see a lot of things on social media. I kind of went straight to websites and to find the platforms that way. But I did tune in to the TV debate that happened, and they said it was like the only TV debate to happen for it. And I found it quite interesting when I was watching it and I was making notes and listening to, I think all three parties were kind of did it, but the Conservative Party leader more in saying that addressing, he was like, I'm for young people, I'm here to represent young people, but there was a failure to say how. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all great to say, mm-hmm. I'm for young people, I'm all of my like policies are gonna help young people, but there was like a failure of how are they helping young people, what areas, what issues, and why is that specifically affecting young people? Mm-hmm. With kind of, there's ideas floating about globally on how to further engage youth in voting. I wondered what your thoughts would be on initiatives such as lowering the voting age to more like 16 rather than 18.
Yeah, so we have some examples, I believe. Again, I remember, at least in the referendum, and you probably weren't familiar with this, in Scotland, mm-hmm. I recall they lowered it to 16. And is the voting age in Scotland 16 for the Scottish elections? I think
it might be. I'm not entirely sure. I know it's UK is 18 for the UK elections, for Scotland itself, I'm not entirely sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, examples, I do remember when during the Scottish referendum, how engaged it seemed. Like, again, I'm just, this is from a third party, from a perspective, from an outsider perspective. But, you know, I think there's the possibility that there's no reason to think 18 is some magic age, right? What is the magic age? Is it 14? Is it 16? Right? Even in the upcoming Liberal leadership, I'm not going to quote an age because I might get it wrong, but I know it's lower than 18, or at least it was in the prior, when Justin Trudeau won the leadership in 2013, it was less than 18. I don't think they're planning to bring it back to 18. I know they're changing the rules and restricting it to citizens this time, citizens and permanent residents, but they're not changing that. So the idea, there is feelings and energy out there outside of official statewide elections, which are like the UK and Canada are good examples that are still at 18, right? So I think those examples give us reason to think about it. There's no reason just to, you know, stay with what has been in place because 18 somehow seems like the age we've always had, so therefore stick with it. Would lowering it really, but I think that it comes back to the other question we talked about earlier, is like if we still look at the data over time, if like 18-year-olds aren't voting on par with 55-year-olds, then why do we think lowering the voting age is going to be that much more useful in terms of engaging youth? Mm. I mean, I don't think it's morally or ethically wrong. I think actually there's something to think about, because I think we, even at 16, public policies and what government does affects your life greatly and can have great effects on your future prospects. So I do think if somebody wanted to vote and has engaged, I think that they should be able to at that age. So I guess, you know, I don't really have a good answer there. I'm just going to say that I support initiatives to consider lowering the voting age. I certainly would not be in favor of raising it. And I don't think 18, there's any kind of reason to believe from the examples we have across the globe that 18 is somehow the magic number.
Yeah, because I know England has floated the idea a bit over recent years about potentially lowering the age for the election across the UK to 16, with a lot of there was actually a lot of traction, I think, with young people, particularly I think 16-year-olds. The gap between 16 to 18, a lot of people when I was that age were going to protests for climate action. There was a big push for that when I was, I think, around 17, and a lot of the people were saying, if we're pushing for issues like this, we should be given the right to vote on them. It's gonna affect us. Like, waiting a year doesn't change anything about how it affects our futures. I also know that there is talk about the capping the voting age of when do you not become cognitive enough to be making a decision. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
The idea, well, that would be a question for sort of developmental psychology, more so than me. I mean, I don't, you know, like your ability to sort of make, you know, rational decisions. Well, I'm not even sure adults are always rational, so I'm not sure that. Yeah, I don't really have a whole lot of insight into from the sort of biological perspective as to when it should be. Again, I think of it more from this perspective of like at what age do you have potentially a stake in our society's future? And when you're 10, would that be unreasonable? Maybe, right? Like 12, I think still, but I think when you're getting into the 14 to 16 range, as opposed to 18, is when I really start to think about people who have independent opinions, visions that are different from their parent about what they want society to look like, and have different ways of engaging. So I do think around that age is when it feels like your political maturation for many people could happen. And so to restrict those people from voting seems unfair, even though there wouldn't necessarily be a huge pool of voters, and I highly doubt they would make a huge impact on the election per se. But I don't think that's a good enough reason not to consider, you know, experimenting with lowering it.
Interesting, yeah. With student organizations, I did a discussion with the student-led NDP kind of group that's on campus. Do you think they play a significant role in kind of youth engagement with political, I guess, news and voting? Because I know they spoke about how they see themselves as bridging a gap between provincial politicians and students to provide better engagement. I wonder if you have any thoughts on whether you think that is kind of a significant role, whether it's been successful at all, or...
Well, I mean, from what I can see, the students that I've had in the past who've been involved with those activities, so whether it's at the NDP and prior, it's quite a few students who were involved with the BC Liberals and did sort of similar kinds of work. And I think it does seem like a useful, it does seem useful, because I do think that students are much more effective at speaking to other students, especially those who are deeply engaged with the parties and can communicate the sort of broader issues and bring down and really parse through what is relevant to students. And I've heard, you know, some really eloquent speakers in my classes who are those types of people. So I do think if more people would engage with them, I do think that's a really helpful way to do it, right? You're more likely, for example, I often get a comment that I think I do reasonably well as a professor, and I get, good comments, but a lot of students will just say, he was intimidating at first, or he uses too many, big words when he lectures or things like that. And I've worked on that over the years to try to sort of smooth that out and do the best I can. But there's no way that with my age, with my experience, like with what I do in my time outside of the classroom, that I can always understand